Reflect for a moment on the art of cinema. Think of a motion picture like The Last Emperor and the 9 Academy Awards it so richly deserved. Consider the profound emotional experience of a truly great film. Then forget it, sweetheart.
Yes, better blow it out your exhaust pipe, cinema lover, because here comes fun with hair on it.
Oh, that's disgusting.
You're gonna see the biggest piece of shattering entertainment that ever molested your sensibilities.
That sounds great.
Want a plot? Here it is. It's the end of the 20th century, and mankind has blown its wad. The fate of humanity rests in the groin of one man.
Their leader, Commander Toady, has kidnapped some pilgrims who wandered into their territory. We're gonna get them out, and then you're gonna get them pregnant.
Yes, if you want a brilliant film, you can go right to...
We're going to Frog Town.
Hell comes to Frog Town. Starring wrestling superstar, Rowdy Roddy Piper. Move over, Mr. Mel Gibson and Mr. Robert De Niro. Here comes acting talent and sensitivity like you've never seen.
You are one weird dude.
Hell comes to Frog Town. A story of mutant sex and people like you and me. It's hot. It's wet.
And it's bad.
It's Hell Comes to Frog Town.
Prepare for wizardly combat.
I want to show you a trick Mother showed me when you weren't around.
And I'll not laugh or cross that button.
Welcome to Spellburn, a podcast covering the Dungeon Crawl Classics role-playing game and old-school adventuring. It's time to party like it's 1974.
This week on Spellburn, the Judges Jay get the band back together for a very special show. We're celebrating the Free RPG Day debut and subsequent Kickstarter of the very long-awaited Mutant Crawl Classics RPG. We all burned down to threes on the Invoke Patron roll for this one, and our special guest for this show is none other than our very own Judge Jim. Now that MCC is officially out there, Judge Jim can tell us everything he's had to keep quiet about for the past few years. So everybody, welcome Judge Jim.
Welcome back, Jim.
Welcome back, Jim.
Oh, it's nice to be back.
Excellent.
I missed you guys.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
No kidding.
Very cool.
Congrats.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow, you're big time now, Jim.
thank you. But everybody's like, congrats, Jim. And there's a whole team of people behind this, including everybody who play tested it. My home campaign, all the people at the cons, Joseph. There's a bunch of stretch goals that a bunch of like you guys, I mean, not you specifically, maybe you specifically, are going to jump in and tag team and help write. So it's a team effort. But yes, I'm very happy.
Good deal. So before we dive into the Kickstarter and Meet and Crawl Classics, let's swing it on over to Tavern Talk and just talk a little bit about what we did in gaming.
And the first rule of bartending is this. GBTB. Go beyond the book. Go beyond the book.
What do you have?
Heineken! F*** that!
Tavern Talk.
Okay, so in Tavern Talk, we talk about what we did in gaming last week, or in our case, maybe the last couple weeks. Last 6 months. So let's try to keep it short, but yeah. And like we like to do, we like to put the guest on the spot and ask Jim what he's been doing.
Oh, right. Put me on the spot first. Thank you. It is like a whole week being back here. I've been really busy, so I haven't had a lot of chance to game. But on Free RPG Day, I ran my ass out to my local friendly game store, Gateway Games, and ran the museum at the end of time and got to run it for a whole new slew of people because obviously my players had played it. And I, you know, the it went great, but I had a good table where Todd piled me up, you know, because the store was crowded. So how many can you handle? Well, it's scheduled for 8. Can you take another player? Sure. Can you take another player? Sure. So it ended up like 10 or 11 people, and three of them were in that 10 to 12 age range. And I love that stuff when kids that age light up. Todd said I was brutal because this one especially brilliant 12-year-old kid whose name is slipping my brain at the moment, he was so smart, but he got all three of his level zeros just murdered. And, you know, I didn't cut him any slack. Stamp, stamp, stamp.
I approve.
Hey, Dad. And then asked his dad to give him one of his level zeros. So apparently I'm a cruel, no-mercy bastard DM.
You Did you make meanie. Him cry like Job does?
No. This kid took it like a champ and dove right back in, and he did the fourth one he got. He squeaked through to the end. So
nice, very cool. That's awesome. Cool. So Jen, what'd you do? What have you been up to?
Oh crap! Of course it's me next. Let's see, since getting back home last month, we've gotten back into the First Ed game a little bit. We're in the Underdark, and it sucks. That's enough said about that. finally got back into running at my friendly local gaming store, Dungeon Games, and man, it feels good after being away for so long. For Free RPG Day, I ran the Lankmar adventure that was released, and just this past Friday, I ran an adventure that hasn't been released yet. The best part was one of the players getting a character that was a mime. And so she was equipped with an invisible rope and an invisible wall. And at one point successfully thwarted one of the bad guys by locking him into an invisible box. I was just so perplexed by it. I'm like, hey, give me a personality check. And I totally failed the will save. So, yeah, dude, couldn't act that round. It was brilliant.
That's cool.
I'll pass that along. Next.
That'd be Job.
Big Job.
Hello.
Hey, okay, I found the mute button. All right, where do I begin? So, I don't know. The first Tuesday of January, I ran some Metamorphosis Alpha. So I don't know, since the last one, I went to GaryCon, that was fun. I went to my first North Texas. I went to North Texas RPG this year.
Yeah.
I played in Jim Wampler's, what's it called, Hive of the Overmind?
Yeah. Completely broken, not ready for primetime adventure yet. You helped me playtest.
Yeah, that was fun. And is that, that's part of the Kickstarter too, right?
Yeah, so we got to fix it.
I didn't think there was much to fix, but, you know, that's just me. And then North Texas... gosh, I played a lot of good games. I can't remember. I sat in and watched a Ghostbusters game. I did a bunch of playtests for my my secret playtest that is going to be announced at Gen Con this year. So stay tuned for that from Goodman Games. Oh, man, I met Jason Schultes at a North Texas RPG. I begged him to draw a picture of my girlfriend's character.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, okay, I guess so. Because he has all these commissions. So I got that. That was cool.
What was she?
Like a barbarian chick with an axe and a shield.
On the fender of a Cadillac.
Yeah. Oh, and I played in his game at North Texas, and that was a lot of fun. He did like little portraits on all of his character sheets. So I can't remember all the awesome people I played with. Oh, I played with Jeff D in his Tecumel inspired game. I forgot what it was called. Bethorm, I think it's called. Yeah. So. Man, that was fun. Oh, and I got another piece of core book original art from him. So slowly collecting some more of that. I don't know. That's about my 6 months in gaming. Quick level.
Nothing more recent?
I'm sure there is. I'm just drawing a blank right now.
Fair enough.
We should build the mystery of your secret project that's going to be announced in Gen Con.
Yeah.
Because you're working on, well, you know, I'm in the sunshine today, but you're working on the next big thing.
I am in a lightless pit. I feel like I'll never get out of it.
That's a spirit.
So for any listeners wondering why there hasn't been much in the way of Spellburn lately, there you go.
I'm in the depths of depression.
Wrong pit.
On that cheery note, Jeffrey, what did you do in gaming?
So let's see. In the past 6 months, we wrapped up our fifth edition D&D game, and we transitioned to Knights Black Agents. That's my local group. We've been playing that. We played some Knights Black Agents. Played that for a while. Then summer hit and got crazy, so we did several board game nights and nights we got together. And we're getting set to ramp up for a Pathfinder game set in Forgotten Realms in the next couple of weeks. So,
I know. I was hoping it'd be more DCC.
Yeah, I didn't have time to run, so it's cool. It'll be fun. It'll be good to be back to the fantasy genre. So, but that's what we've got. That's what I've got going on gaming wise. So, still gaming, still out there, fitting it in where I can. So, that's what we've got.
Awesome. Fitting it in.
Well, that whole real life thing, yeah.
Okay, so with that, let's take it over and summon some emails.
You've got mail.
Message for you, sir.
Summon email.
Okay, so if you want to write to us, you can contact us at theband@spellburn.com, and we'll read your email sometime within the next couple months. But we do have several emails stacked up. Jen, you want to start us out with the first one?
Yeah, I saw that coming. Okay. Oh, yeah. And I get to butcher names, too. Awesome. Wait, he included a pronunciation guide. So the first one comes from Forrest Aguirre. That should be right. He says, "Greetings, Spellburners. I just took a trip in the Wayback Machine and re-listened to the episode on advanced magic. I'm curious if any of you have allowed or had experience with ritualized magic with clerics, particularly when a group of worshippers of the same deity are gathered to call on their god and invoke its powers as a group, much as a wizard circle would do. If so, how did you handle it? If not, how would you? Or would you disallow such a thing? What are your objections to such a practice?" Wow, some good deep questions in that one. Who wants to field it first?
Yeah, that's a good question. And when we were running online, I let one of the Santh, the cleric in Temple of the Moon, did a ritual. Actually had followers and everything like that. And I allowed it to happen. All the circumstances were there, and I let them perform a ritual. So I would allow it. I think it's something cool. You might want to make some special item have to be available, or you know, a certain number of people or something like that there, I guess. But it worked well in the game I ran, so I would certainly allow it.
Yeah, I'm in the same mind as Jeffrey. Yeah, call me crazy. I think I've even let some clerics add a bonus to the wizard's ritual magic. So
interesting.
You want to, I mean, you know, I guess and justify it, like they're kind of familiar with the same kind of preparations and attention to detail, so maybe they could help out. Why not?
Well, check me on this. Couldn't a cleric and a wizard both be patron to the same dude?
I don't see why not.
Yeah, I mean, some patrons are deities, right? So maybe it could happen.
Right, and it's not like we're in a monotheistic world, so it's not like the cleric's original god is going to get jealous, or at least shouldn't, depending on the god. Now, the ritualized magic takes longer than just a regular spell, right? Yes, no?
Yeah, it was a whole ritual. I think it depended on how complex what they were shooting for as to how long I would make it go. You know, I could see it taking up to an hour. So I think there's in the rule book even stuff where it could take, you know, a day or more. But I think it just depended on the effect that they were going for and what they were trying to accomplish as to how long the ritual would actually have to take to proceed with.
Yeah, I've had two arcane spellcasters try to cast the same spell at the same time, and they figured we should just do it together at the same time in the same round and have one spell go off between the two of us, so I allowed a bonus on that. Is that overly nice of me?
I could see that happening, maybe. I don't know. I could see letting people do that. I mean, how big a bonus were you giving them for it?
Oh, I think it was whatever the other person's intelligence modifier was.
Yeah, I could see that being reasonable.
Yeah,
why not? Also kind of a, you know, I could sit there and say no, but that doesn't really accomplish much. Plus, it means I'm only getting one spell against my bad guys.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was like, yeah, it could actually work out to your advantage as the judge.
I mean, there's only so nice you can be as a judge. I mean, there's a 5% chance that they'll tank it with a one anyway. And then all hell breaks loose. So you could be as nice as you want, and they can still roll a one.
And that still works in my favor. Yeah. Okay. Well, it's pretty generalized consensus there. So hope that helps, Forrest.
Yep, thanks for writing in.
Next.
I can read the next one. This next one's from Alan Skinner, and he writes us, "Hey, Spellburners, Judge Skinner here, still loving the show. My only wish is that you put out episodes more frequently. My question is regarding how you keep track of all the crazy stuff that can happen to PCs in the DCC RPG. Through spell corruption, patron taint, weird adventures, and so on, it seems that PCs can pick up a lot of weird and unique things, and sometimes I forget them all. For example, one of our party wizards has no shadow, eyes without pupils, a small demon that lives on her shoulder and gives her bad advice, a black orb that, if used, might turn her into an insatiable demon hound, and another orb that allows her to make someone fall in love with whosoever she chooses. And that's just one character out of the 8 PCs in the party. They all have a bunch of crazy stuff like this. I find that I often forget one detail or another about the characters, even though I have them all written down. Any suggestions?" So what do you guys think? How do you guys keep track of all the crazy stuff as the characters evolve?
I usually make them just write it down on their character sheet and let them worry about it. sometimes I'll remember if it's, you know, pertinent that, you know, that they've got one eye that's an eye stalk or something. But yeah,
that doesn't sound like someone in one of your games at all, Job.
I don't know. How about you, Jim?
I am very much of the spirit that you suggest, where I try, because I'm old and forgetful and dyslexic, so I try and offload as much as possible to the players and make it their job to keep track of some of that stuff and remind me of it, because generally they'll remind you of it when it's to their advantage. You don't have to worry about that, right? And yeah. But I'll make sure I say out loud, okay, it's your responsibility to remind me that that cybernetic arm doesn't work at night, you know, or something like that. And then, you know, God help you if you don't remind me and I catch it, that kind of thing.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I'm in Alan's boat on this one. I write it down and I still forget. So,
unless it's somehow germane to the story we're trying to tell, I don't worry about it all that much. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, if you have the opportunity to go through and, like, if you're running a module, you can see what monsters you're going to have pitted against her and, or your party in general, and maybe flip through that list and see if there's anything that's going to adversely affect the combat.
If it's fun, the players are going to remember it anyway. So, you know, my incredibly mature group on the island, when they started the game, one of the players was Horse Effer. It was the character's name. And so one of them ended up getting a different character, ended up getting a corruption where it was a horse tail. And so that horse tail was mentioned quite a bit after that point.
I
got nothing.
Now, I tend to do sort of like you guys do, count on the players themselves to come up with it. But I'm also a huge index card user for games, and I use them for initiative. So I can make notes on those. And so as I cycle through, if I really want to highlight something, it tends to be hard to miss it, because I tend to rotate through and I get a fairly regular reminder. So I'll use those index cards to make notes. And since they're part of my initiative cards, it sort of keeps it in my mind as we go. But for the most part, like Job says, I sort of let the players latch onto what they think is fun and you know, explore that and go from there with it, and not stress too much about keeping track of all the little details here and there as we go. So
I actually do that too, Jeffrey, and you're the guy I picked it up from.
The index card piece?
Yeah. From back when I was on the show, you were always talking about the index cards. I'm like, that's a good idea.
I love them. I throw them in my bag, and they make great initiative cards and pass notes to get other players to the table, and you always have them. They make table tents at con games, so I'm a big index card fan.
Inexpensive aids.
Hey, the original character sheet.
Yeah, cool. Okay, so I think that covers that, and let's see. It looks like we've got an email from DM Kojo. Job?
Hey, let me jump in there. Hey, Burners. I'm wondering if you have any tips or systems that you can use to track various magic items, special equipments, NPC contacts, and other pieces of information that your players acquire over the course of a campaign. I can't tell you how many times I've been running an adventure only to have players pull out some crazy piece of equipment from 3 adventures ago and derail my plans. Some examples that particularly come to mind are the tin soldiers and the bone hoarding of the dancing horror Chris Hooker, This Means You, The Sword Nightraker from The Imperishable Sorceress, The Band of Fire from Sailors on the Starless Sea, The Black Pearl from The Tower of Its Namesake, and of course, several mysterious items from Frozen in Time. I would love to hear any recommendations you might have. Thanks, DM Kojo.
Wow, that's almost on the same wavelength as the first.
Yeah, I recommend Jeffrey's index cards.
I'm sticking to my index cards answer.
Yeah, I've got players that have acquired so much weird stuff, and I keep expecting them to pull it out. And they're like, no, I'm going to sit on that one for a while. All right, you know, it's kind of like luck. If you don't use it and you die with it, it's your own fault.
Yeah. Well, Coach, it sounds like you've got some pretty good players, pretty ingenious. So usually my players get all that stuff and they just forget about it after next play session. Yeah.
That's a real thing. I have the opposite problem where, you know, they're banging away at the door and can't get it open. And one of them's, you know, carrying a comm badge. And I'm like, don't you remember you have that thing? It'll open the door.
Yeah, I find that happen probably more often than the other way where they forget what they've got than pulling it out at crazy times.
So, Jim, in a case like that, would you make them give you an intelligence check or something to remember they have it?
No, I say yes to the players as often as possible. So if saying yes means they want to sit there and invent a whole new way to get this artifact door open, I just let them cook and do it.
Okay.
Okay, so I think that wraps up the email for this evening. So let's roll this over to what everybody's here for and go to Mighty Deeds.
Wait a second. I have an idea.
That's plenty for the both of us.
I move for no man.
Ow.
Mighty Deeds.
Okay, in this week's Mighty Deeds, we are going to talk to Jim about Mutant Crawl Classics and anything else we can think of as we go. Mutant Crawl Classics is a Kickstarter that launched 3 weeks ago, after CRPG Day. So it launched about 3 weeks ago. There's 8 days to go as we speak. There will still be 5 or 6 days left by the time this show is live. So there's still plenty of time to get in on Mutant Crawl Classics. So let's see. Well, why don't we just start with Jim? Why don't you tell us a little bit about Mutant Crawl Classics before we dive into the questions? Give us the elevator pitch, if you will.
The elevator pitch is Mutant Crawl Classics is DCC meets Gamma World. And it works the same way, except I've done everything I can to make it better, where it's 100% compatible with DCC in a way that Gamma World and AD&D never quite managed. So where Gamma World's job was just to be science fiction D&D, that's Mutant Crawl Classics' job is just to be science fiction DCC. So everything you like in DCC is replicated in some fashion in MCC with lots of extra cool bonus stuff.
Yay, bonus stuff.
Very cool.
So how long have you been working on Mutant Crawl Classics? Because, let's see, when I first met you, you already had a Spyro-bound copy of it. Or at least an early iteration. I'm sure it's evolved quite a bit since then. But what, that was probably, 3 years ago?
For me, it's been 4 years since I was pitching Joseph and working on it for Goodman. It's been 3 years. You're right. You're exactly right. But as soon as I got my hands on DCC and started playing it, which for me was 2012, probably I'm about 9-10 months behind the main crowd who first discovered it right out the door or knew about it before it was published. I came a little bit after that. But as soon as I got my hands on DCC, I saw the golden opportunity. Because DCC itself, I didn't think it could feel about a role-playing game the way I did about D&D in 1979 ever again. It's like your first girlfriend. You're never going to love anybody that much, right? And then it happened when I found DCC. So as soon as DCC came out, I'm like, okay, Gamma World was always my favorite RPG or second favorite RPG. This has to happen. And I started working on it right away, like 4 years ago.
Wow.
And how long after that did you pitch it to the Dark Master?
It was a good solid year, maybe year and a half of pitching.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, because some of us have been through this process, maybe all of us. I came out of left field. Joseph didn't have any idea who I was. And, that's how it works. You're pitching. And, you know, the guy at the game company is saying, nope, did that already. Except it was Harley at North Texas Con like three or four years ago. I'm like out there pitching ideas like crazy, and Harley's like, oh yeah, we did that in DCC number 33. Oh, we did that one in number 53. I'm like, damn it.
Well, see, there was the problem talking to Harley as opposed to Joseph.
Well, my professional advice to anybody who wants to break in is one way you can do it is what I did. I waited carefully until the very first Metamorphosis Alpha Kickstarter blazed through all its stretch goals and then started bolting extra adventures on, and I got the idea they didn't have enough guys to write all that extra stuff, and so I showed up with a pitch, like, here's a whole adventure idea, what do you think? And that got my foot in the door, and I'm sure Job has got a similar story, and I know you do, Jen.
Me? No. I don't write. No.
Well, the equivalent with, like, copy editing and the things you do.
I think that was born out of, Dak ran out of time and is only one person. And, I'm cool with that because the table's pretty full before the editing. So it works. But no, not writing. I'm nowhere near that echelon.
It's like a bell curve. Michael Curtis warned me before any of this started. And you know, like, okay, this is how you break in, but be careful what you wish for, because then the other side of the bell curve is once the Dark Master finds out that you can hit a deadline and put, you know, string words together, that's going to be the rest of your life, is cranking these things out.
Yeah. Now, you worked on some, you've written games before though, Jim, right? Didn't you do something with Mud Puppy Games, like for Metamorphosis Alpha 5th edition or something, or 4th edition?
Yes, the one before the one that's in the middle of just coming out, which was 4th edition. Back in 2005, my brother and I started a game publishing company. It only lasted a year. We published two games, 4th edition Metamorphosis Alpha and a little science fiction miniatures game I wrote based on an old Heritage paint and play set called Galacta 3. And way before that, like back in the Dark Ages, submitted stuff to Judges Guild, Pegasus Magazine, and Tim Cask's old Adventure Gaming Magazine.
Was that just art?
Cartoons, art, articles.
Oh, cool. Some things to go haunt up.
Did any of the articles get published?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, not a lot. Wow. And obviously, I didn't become famous or anything. If you like, every year at North Texas, Bad Mike has all those Judges Guild things, and I usually pick up another copy of Pegasus number 4 that I had an article and some cartoon art in. But if anybody else runs out and do that, please remember I was only a teenager at the time. I'm no Janelle Jakeway or Jeff D. That's the great thing about Mutant Crawl Classics is, like, legitimate, actually good artists get to illustrate for that.
Well, hey, that actually swings in right in line with some questions we had submitted by our friend DM Kojo specifically for you. One of his questions was, besides the esteemed Mr. Kovacs and Mr. Poag, which artist do you hope to see to do a cover for an MCC module?
That's very interesting, because that's a discussion Joseph and I are having right now. It will be the Dark Master's call, but he's just pulling me for ideas, and I'm just a huge Stefan Poag fan, so whatever Doug can't do, I hope Stefan gets it there and does it. And I will mispronounce his name, but he does DCC black and white art, William McAuslin.
Yeah.
Do you know who I mean?
Oh, yeah.
He's great.
I would love to see him do painted covers. I just don't know if it's a conflict of interest, because he's well known for doing the Mutant Epic book covers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he wrote that too. That's pretty interesting. I don't know if you picked that up, but
I've looked at it. I haven't actually purchased it.
Is that another not wanting to cross the streams before the IP is out there?
Yeah, once I started writing this, I kept myself clean. Like, it killed me when Reed Filippo came out with Crawling on a Broken Moon, because I couldn't read the first 7 or 8 issues until after I turned my manuscript in. Then I got to dive in. Because philosophically, I'm like, you know, rising tide raises all boats. I'm for everybody writing everything all the time. Like, people are on the comment section of the Kickstarter right now, and you know how gamers are. No matter how many options and cool things you give them, what about X plus one more, right? So they're like, you know, will there be robot and cyborg player class? And I, you know, no, there's not going to be in the game, but that's, you know, who cares? Reed Filippo will do it, or somebody, you know, it'll get done.
Well, are there any RPG authors, either with Goodman Games or not, that you would like to see write an MCC adventure? Or is that something a little bit too backstage to answer right now?
You are asking the backstage questions, because these are things we're trying to figure out right now while the Kickstarter's rolling.
Blame Kojo. I blame Kojo. He just fed me questions.
I love DM Kojo. I'm not saying the brother's a hill giant, but if we both trip and fall, if we both trip and fall, he's taking one more D6 of damage than I am.
Oh boy.
But I will do as much behind the curtains without getting myself in trouble as I think I can do. I came into this, you know, how do I explain this? I always feel like I have like imposter syndrome, right? I feel like I'm the fresh faced kid on the block, and I just assumed that Mutant Crawl Classics was going to be kind of like a second class game behind DCC. So I'm pitching Joseph my suggested list of writers who could write adventures, because there's going to be like 7 of them, and I can't write them all. Don't want to write them all. I'd die. My head would, you know, spin off my shoulders and shoot flame. So I'm pitching him my idea of a list of writers, and I'm pulling, like, you know, the up and coming guys. And Joseph came back with, no, this is going to be our leading product, our leading line. We want, you know, our top tier guys. So I don't know who those are going to be, but it wouldn't shock me if Harley and Mike and Job wrote MCC Adventures. Except maybe Job's slammed getting the new thing. Well, I'd love it, brother, if you did, but I know understand if you can't. So, you know, it's gonna get the full press effort from Goodman Games.
That is so awesome. Right. Congratulations, man.
Yeah.
Our Jim's all grown up.
I know.
It's cool.
I'm still the same half idiot I've always been.
Your words, sir.
So, for the art and the writing, it's going to be, you know, deadlines and everybody's bandwidth notwithstanding, it's going to be the best people Joseph can get. I can tease something. There's an industry veteran that's not written a lot for Joseph, and who is not Jim Ward, who is collaborating with me on one of the stretch goals.
Ooh. Wait, you said who is not Jim Ward?
Yeah, how mysterious is that?
Wow.
And for the same reason, poor Jim is, like, you know, up to his neck in projects, so he couldn't do it even if he wanted to.
Yeah. Right.
So another, you know, old vet like that.
So you mentioned Gamma World was your second favorite game, and we've touched on Metamorphosis Alpha. What were some other influential materials in the making of MCC? What were some other sources? And it doesn't necessarily have to be game, movies, books. What led into, you know, MCC?
I mean, I do the same thing everybody does. I just draw from all the media that I've consumed. That's my advice to up-and-coming writers. You know, it doesn't matter. I know, like, because I've done it, I know, like, you tend to idolize the guys. Like, you know, it would be so cool if they were here so I could embarrass them. But, like, I idolized Mike Curtis and Harley when I started playing DCC, right? But I tell you what we've all got that Gary Gygax doesn't have, and that's a unique history of our own media consumption to draw from, with books, movies, or what have you. So for me, MCC is, you know, two parts Gamma World, two parts Jack Kirby's Commandy, Last Boy on Earth, a bunch of Brian Aldiss and Sterling Lanier and Andre Norton and Jack Vance, and you know, just some of the cheesiest, worst post-apocalyptic movies you can imagine. Somebody just put me on to Hell Comes to Frogtown, and somehow I missed that one as a kid, and that movie is friggin' awesome.
Hell Comes to Frogtown. Taking notes. Okay.
I mean, I warn you, it's Howard the Duck bad, but it's awesome too. and there's little bits and pieces, like, in isn't DCC written where when you're generating a level 0, if he has a negative stamina modifier, the level 0 still gets one hit point?
Yeah, I think so.
Is that the rules as written?
I believe so, yeah.
My little tribute to Traveler character generation is, in MCC, that character is stillborn. and roll a new one.
So you can die during character generation is what you're saying?
Yes.
Awesome.
All right. Well, now that's great. You've opened that door.
So who gets his stuff?
Well, can you tell us
the placenta?
I wasn't going there. So can you tell us about, you know, what the classes are for Mutant Crawl Classics?
Surely. And it's interesting to me because I started out more or less replicating what goes on in Gamma World. So there were only four classes to start with. And I did a lot of, you know, it wasn't a linear design process. I got notes from mainly from in the very beginning from Michael Curtis and later from Joseph. And I did dumb things like stamina was called resistance and personality was called psionics. But they functioned exactly the same. And Mike Curtis is like, why are you doing that? Why don't you just do what's in DCC? And then the light went on. I'm like, oh, yeah, I shouldn't. Why change things just to change them? And the original four classes in Mutant Crawl Classic were just pure strain human, mutant, manimal, and plantient. And Joseph gave me a note back going, why don't you open it up and make it more like DCC so there are four classes humans can be and then racist class for the other three. So the official classes for pure strain humans are Sentinel, a warrior class, Shaman, which is a sort of wizard class, sort of cleric class, healers, which is definitely a cleric class, and rovers, which it's tempting to compare to thieves and scouts, but it's more of a rogue kind of character. So sentinels, shaman, healers, and rovers, and then mutants who are just mutated humans, manimals who are sentient, bipedal mammals, animals, and plantients, which are, you know, your Groot swamp thing kind of character, sentient plants.
So it's restricted to mammals?
No, it is not.
Okay.
And there's a big ass animal. It always frustrated me in Gamma World that they didn't let you roll up what kind of animal. They just put you on the spot and said you had to make one up. And you effectively created a whole race every time you did that. I want to play a mutant badger. Okay, now there are mutant badgers in the world. So I provide a table on MCC with a lot of options, but nothing would stop you from doing that same thing. Somebody pointed out who had access to the rules and is playtesting them, I left ducks out. I'm like, well, you know, somebody's heart desires to play a sentient duck, let them. It's all the same rules.
They're going to be bipedal, so yeah, hopefully they'll have hands, right? Maybe.
Most of them will.
I meant the poor duck.
The baseline is that they all can talk and walk erect and use tools with some prehensile appendage. But then there are other mutations you can get into that would change all that.
Okay.
There's a poor level zero in the pre-gens for the Museum in a Time that has metal hooks instead of hands.
Okay, yeah, that would make life a little bit more difficult.
Because that's the way the character got rolled up on the tables.
Okay.
So do you have some kind of like laser gun rules or something?
Sure. I mean, it was a design choice of mine to make it all far future, sort of retro future tech, and not be like the one thing that bugged me about Gamma World is that you're finding tanks and what was then 20th century technology when all that stuff would rot and go away in 100 years. You're never going to, 100 years from now, which is no time, you know, you would never find a working M30 tank, right?
No.
But this, whatever it was, this Vancian super science society fell on their devices and buildings were made of such imperishable materials that they're still there 10,000 years later to be dug up. And hey, the power cells even still got a little fusion charge. But that said, the expected tropes that everybody wants are all there. Joe, you know, power armor, particle beam weapons, force field generation belts.
What about
you,
like?
You got to give the people what they want.
Okay, is there any like kind of like spaceship combat or spaceship travel or anything?
No.
Not yet.
See, Stephen Newton has written an MCC adventure that I think he's going to end up publishing through Thick Skull Adventures. And the first idea he pitched me was all aliens landing on the planet. And I'm like, you know, for a setting, that's kind of a year two or year three idea. You want to set the baseline and then bring the crazy in, right?
Yeah.
But you could. I mean, one of the patron AIs that comes in the book is an AI that's based on the ruins of an ancient Mars base. He's not even on the planet. He's one planet over controlling things.
Oh, jeez.
Okay, so you mentioned AIs, which is one of the things I wanted to get to. Could you explain a little bit kind of, you know, how AIs work? I kind of understand there's something like a patron. What classes get access to an AI, for example?
Well, there's two things. Imagine them in three stages. There are rules in Mutant Crawl Classics to give a small AI and personality with quirks and everything to any device. So your laser pistol could have its own little AI and sit there and argue about how well you're keeping it charged and when it should be fired. That was one of the things I wrote in to mitigate that MCC, in effect, is crawling with magic items where they're more rare in DCC. Then there would be like the regular level of AIs that would be in robots and even androids. And then what you're asking about are patron AIs, which are just the MCC version of patrons and deities in DCC. These are super intelligent, gigantic AIs that will grant the shaman class access to wetware programs, which would just be the patron AI. Say it's a global, ancient global weather satellite. That's one of them. Gaia, the global array Earth AI. It's the ancient weather satellite system that's still in orbit, and she has as a patron. Her goal is to try. She's been trying for thousands of years to restore the ecology of the planet back to its baseline. So, if you're her shaman, she's going to grant you these wetware programs that are just her putting data in your head of all the unified field equations and gestures and vocal components that in combination will change the laws of physics. You see where it gets Jack Vance there all of a sudden. Jeez, right?
Yeah.
But that's all just window dressing, because in game mechanics and in play, those are just spells. They're only different from spells in the particulars of the effects.
So MCC, the core book, will have new spells in it.
Yes.
As well as the mutations.
Right. Okay. It's a difference in the flavor of the game, because every mutant, manimal, and plantient is in effect a tiny spellcaster, because the mutations have mutation check tables that work just like spell check tables.
Right. That was one of the things that really stuck with me from the first time we went and played over in Cincinnati. Even though you're not a caster, you have these mutation powers, but they're not set in stone like you might expect from, Gamma World or Metamorphosis Alpha, where does the same thing every time. So it breaks the magic missile for me again, which I love.
I want to make sure I answered Job's question. Job, so it's just like in Star Trek when they land on the planet and the computer's in charge of the planet. Like, all hail Vol, the computer that's sitting in the Dragonmouth Cave. That's a patron AI right there.
Okay.
Who controls that whole planet.
That is so cool.
So we get some AIs in the book, and if I'm not mistaken, based on one of the recent stretch goals, we get monsters included in the book.
Well, the rules as written, the manuscript, which was already in layout, unfortunately, because now we're going to go tear that layout back up, came with three patron AIs, a whole bestiary, and obviously all the mutations I put in the game. But the stretch goals for the Kickstarter the Kickstarter blazed through included two books called The Mutation Manual and the AI Addendum that would have provided extra mutations and extra patron AIs. The feedback in the Kickstarter was solidly in favor of, rather than give us little booklets that we have to keep track of, why don't please include this information in the core rulebook so it's just all there to begin with. So now the rulebook, instead of having three patron AIs, 16 pages was the Kickstarter goal. So what's that, you guys? Three pages a patron? Three, four pages?
Roughly.
So say another
another four or five?
Yeah, at least another five patron AIs. 16
cool.
Pages new mutations would be at least 16 new mutations.
Yay! I'm excited for content. I'm not cheering that your workload got bigger. Well, kind of.
Well, I happen to be doing the layout, so it did increase my layout workload. But the patron AIs and the extra mutations will all be a pile-on tag team writing effort. It won't have to be all me, which is I think is great, because that will bring other people's imaginations into it. So it's not just all me and everything I can think of.
Yeah, and there you have it, guys. If you're willing to lay out your own stuff, you can well, it might be a bonus.
It's like a little miniature version of what happened with the DCC rulebook, right? Joseph wrote that. Joseph is the author, right? But when they started playtesting it, you know, he whistled in Michael Curtis to write this and Dieter Zimmerman to write this. And the credits have all this additional contributors. I'm very happy that that's going to happen with MCC.
It is a very cool thing. And I love seeing that more and more people from the community are getting involved. So what do we have with it now? We're up to 6 adventure modules as far as the Kickstarter goes. Pushing 7.
And the 7th one is just around the corner. It'll happen.
Yeah,
I mean, it might happen today.
You're less than 5,000 away.
Yeah, I think that's a given. It's going to happen.
Okay.
So that's a lot of support right out the gate.
Yes.
And that's awesome because that's something sometimes, you know, when you get a new rule set or something like that, it needs some of that support. So it's great that the Kickstarter is going to, I mean, like you said, you're going to roll out with, you know, probably 7 adventures right out of the gate. And that's a great way to get started.
And a low cost to get all of those in print. Otherwise, they come free in PDF form to anyone getting the book. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, you just back the core rulebook and you get all those adventures in PDF at no cost. But the printer's block thing Joseph came up with for the adventures, when it was just 5 adventures, it was more or less at retail cost. But now every stretch goal goes through, that print block price stays the same. So, you know, by tomorrow, it'll be 7 adventures for $50 instead of 5 for $50.
And that's, yeah, heck of a deal. It's like that guy knows what he's doing. It's like he's done this before.
Well, right, 15 Kickstarters and all of them successes.
Yes. So the upcoming stretch goals, it looks like we have the data orb coming up. And yeah, even the stretch goal says, huh, the data orb, what's that?
Yeah, since it's not unveiled, I don't know what I can say about it except that...
look for more info on this soon.
Well, no, I'll give you guys a scoop. If anybody who's familiar with... this, which Bill Webb, I say this up front, this only occurred to me after I had the idea and we started writing it, but it's sort of like a Mutant Crawl Classics version of Bill Webb's little book, Bill Webb's Dirty Tricks. It's sort of like a little survival guide for MCC.
Oh.
Yeah, very cool.
So it would be something that'll be fun to just sit down and read, but the booklet itself actually functions as an artifact in the game that a player can own and use.
Oh, nice. So it's best if the judge reads it ahead of time, but yeah, that I dig things like that.
I mean, you can't stop players from buying and reading stuff, but the judge will totally keep this. And,
yeah.
You know, okay, you're using the data orb. You know, get your D30 out. Okay, now roll. Okay, now roll this.
Okay.
So
that's very cool.
So one thing that I thought was like intriguing, I wanted to learn more about on the Kickstarter page, was the artifact bonus die. Can you kind of talk a little bit about how that works?
The rules mechanic?
Yeah.
Oh, sure. Those of us who go back to first edition Gamma World, everyone loved how you understood artifacts. Gamma World pioneered a game mechanic that wasn't in Metamorphosis Alpha, which was that flow chart where you're some primitive player character trying to understand how the hell the suit of power armor or the laser pistol works. And it was this flow chart that took up a whole page. And there were several of them that you would roll around and different things would happen as you made and failed these rolls. You could, you know, do everything from figure it out and use it to blow it up and take out half the party. And as much as we all adored that mechanic, it was time intensive. In that if it was a very sophisticated device, it happened just in this past year. Todd ran us through Expedition to Barrier Peaks, and this guy sitting next to me took 45 minutes to figure out the power armor because he just was doing laps around this table. In MCC, I have reduced the mechanic to a straight D20 table, but it's written and engineered in such a way that it replicates those same effects from the old Gamma World flow chart. Where you can blow yourself up, figure things out. It's DCC-ified. You get depending on your intelligence modifier, and sometimes depending on your class ability at whatever level you are, you get certain bonuses to that artifact roll, and then you get to do all the DCC stuff. Like, if you know you failed, you can burn luck and push it, but how far do you need to push it? Well, how nice is the judge? Is he going to hint, or do you just have to start blowing luck? And it's very important in actual campaign play. It took my players in my home campaign that I play tested this with some time to get the hang of it. And when I'm running con games, I help people out so that they're not, you know, artificially screwed. Because there's a time and a place when an artifact is important. You know, because understanding artifacts in MCC is kind of like the third class of monsters, because they're as dangerous as the monsters are, right?
Oh, definitely.
So there's a time and a place for having a good time blowing yourselves up, you know, destroying artifacts in the middle of a dungeon. It's not always that time, you know. You might want to just go ahead and, you know, the Plantians in MCC function similarly to halflings. So you want to, you know, a Plantian standing next to you, you know, ready to bump your luck in case you, you know, tank the roll.
Do Plantians, are they bipedal by nature, or does another party member have to carry around a flower pot?
What's funny is the common sense answer that makes perfect sense is in the rules. You know, there's also a big table for every variety of plant person you could roll, and for some reason those are hilarious. People are like, I'm playing a barrel cactus. You know, I'm a shrub. No, but you know, at level zero, out of the box, they can all walk, they can all talk, they all have prehensile, you know, limb hands, so kind of like Swamp Thing or Groot. What's funny about your question, though, is I had a character in my home campaign who, if you when you're making radiation saves, if you crit succeed a radiation save, you gain a mutation, and if you crit fail, you lose a mutation. And this poor bastard had worked his way through losing. Playing a Plantient, had lost all his mutations, and when the last one went, he became a 3 intelligence immobile plant who was still that player character, and they carried him around for a while in a pot like Groot in Guardians of the Galaxy till he got a mutation back and could walk and talk again.
Jeez. So
that's kind of fun, right?
How does healing work in MCC? You know, speaking of having to carry around your poor buddies until they're broken again.
Well, regular, you know, I sleep overnight for 8 hours. I get a hit point back just like DCC. The pure strain human class healer has 2 ways to heal you. They have an oral tradition of the sort of naturopathy where they get so many heals a day. Like at first level, it's 1d4, and then it starts scaling up where it's multiple heals a day that are like, you know, barks and berries and mental feedback, you know, sort of naturopathy heals. They have another class ability where when they get their hands on a medical artifact of any type, their results bump up the dice chain depending on what level they are. So say the player characters have gotten their hands on a medipack, which, you know, will heal you. A regular player who understands how to use the medipack will heal you for 3d8, but the healer uses it and suddenly it's 3d12, that kind of thing.
Oh, very useful.
Yeah, medipacks. Okay. Medipacks are a bitch. Once the players get their hands on that, it's hard to kill them.
Now, do you have defects?
There are absolutely defects, and I'm so glad you brought that up, because it's one thing to say the mutations operate just like spell checks in DCC. It's another thing to sit down and roll on the tables and actually read what happens, and the defects are that way too, right? So you're at character creation, or you fail to save later, and suddenly you pick up a defect. Now you're rolling a d20. How bad is that defect? You know, has it absolutely cripple the character and turn him inside out, or is it not that bad? There's a whole range of possibilities. It was my favorite part of the game that I wrote.
Nice.
Like, a mental mutation is mind control. You know, depending on what you roll, you might just mind control the one guy for one round, all the way up to you just mind control everybody within 100 feet, and they regard you as their new god.
Wow, nice.
So plenty of ways for players to break your game. Got it. Depending on how well they roll.
The game will have to come out and people play it and review it for me to know if I'm correct. But if I did what I think I did correctly, it functions just like DCC. So as you know, I'm talking just like, oh, this is cool, this is awesome. It sounds very swingy and very chaotic, but it should be self-balancing just like DCC is. I mean, the luck
mechanics
everything in DCC.
I didn't mean it in a deprecating way. It just so happens that every time we try to play test something, Bob ends up casting things like Charm Person or Hold Person or something along those lines and hits the very top result. So, yeah, that was my big bad guy. Okay, game's over now. Thanks.
Job, I was just thinking of you earlier in the week because there were all these playtest reports on Google Plus for people running the Museum at the End of Time, and this one group, I don't even remember where they were, you know, 8 states away played it, and there was a player who was so happy because he broke Jim Wampler's adventure, right? He figured out a way to break the adventure, and I'm just like, I just commented, fair enough, I've broken enough other people's adventures, fair enough.
So that last question made me think of something. How compatible is MCC with DCC? I'm sure there's judges out there right now that are coming up with ideas of how they're going to bring Plantients into their DCC campaign or something like that. So how well is that going to work?
It's designed to be 100% compatible. And by 100% compatible, I mean you can just take player characters or monsters and just drag and drop them into either system. There are actually some optional rules in the back that tell you some explicit things in case you're not prepared to just do it yourself and hot dog it. Like, you know, if a bunch of MCC guys fall through a portal and show up in the DCC universe, they're just regarded as another kind of demon. And they're not at all thrown for a loop by elves and dwarves because that just looks like new mutant races to them, right? A Plantient shows up and the DCC guys are all like, oh, look, it's a plant elemental.
Oh.
But mechanically, mechanically 100% compatible. I've had a DCC wizard running around in my home campaign for 2 years now because she decided to start playing the session we were running the Great Stonehell Laser Massacre. So she rolled up a DCC wizard and then decided to go with the group back to their world. And she picked up a patron AI to give her new spells.
Very cool.
So the MCC, it has a character funnel too, I would assume?
Yes.
Similar?
Absolutely. The MCC equivalent is the Rite of Passage, which is just a character funnel version of that, you know, stereotypical first Gammaworld adventure where your tribe, to become an adult member of your tribe, they send you out into the wilderness to survive for a week and come back with one functioning artifact. And that's just one version of the character funnel. I'm sure when new writers get in, they'll come up with new ideas. There are two level zero adventures that I know of right now. The Museum at the End of Time is one, and that's the exact premise of that one. James Smith came up with a hell of an idea that he's allowed me to write up myself called Hive of the Overmind. And that's a little slightly different MCC character funnel in that the level zeros went out for their rite of passage and immediately got bushwhacked and kidnapped and wake up somewhere else.
Very nice. Very cool.
And we'll... Purple Sorcerer have an option for the MCC character auto generator by the time the book comes out?
Oh, certainly by the time the book comes out. The only thing that's holding John Marr up right now is he doesn't have a copy of the rules because as the layout is evolving, there are actually some slight rule changes happening. But once the layout gets locked, he'll get a an NDA copy of the rules and start building that.
Very cool. I look forward to that one.
Well, he's like the best guy on earth for that.
Oh, yeah.
I was happy to contribute to that little funding drive he just did because he mostly does it all for the love of the game.
What better reason? And
well,
and the
as
community.
Long as you've got some other way of paying your rent, there's no better reason.
Hey,
well,
you know, the rest of us in the community love him for it, and we're grateful as hell. So it all works.
So you spoke about the equivalent to the spell system in MCC. What about Mighty Deeds? Do you have like an equivalent kind of mechanic or just the same thing?
There's not a direct equivalency. For example, the closest thing to a warrior class in MCC is the Sentinel class, and they have an extra die that they roll with their attack, but it's an artifact die that only applies to artifacts that are either weapons or armor. So if a Sentinel happens to have a Mazer rifle, then he sort of has this extra Mighty Deed-ish die that adds to his attack and his damage. But it's a little more limited because they have lots of other crazy powerful stuff.
Okay.
It's sort of a balancing act. You see what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like, I mean, it's got to be tough.
Well, I mean, not this doesn't tie into Mighty Deed so much, but baseline, DCC is pretty magic rare, and not only are artifacts all over the place in MCC, it's the raison d'etre for half the campaign is to go out and find these things, right? So how do you keep it balanced with all that going on? Well, most of the artifacts have power cells, and the power cells have finite charges. So suddenly, power cells in the game are like the gold in DCC. That's the thing they're really always looking for. And as a judge, that's your job, is to run them out of power cell charges as fast as you can, because then the artifact is just a doorstop, right? So that's one way you mitigate it. And the other is with that little AI personality thing. Because, you know, your flame-tongued sword is not going to run out of charges and probably isn't going to have a discussion with you about how best to use it. Your Dazer pistol might do that.
That is a damn fine point. One of the terms I'm seeing in the Kickstarter is Glowburn. Is that the counterpart to Spellburn?
It's excellent that you brought that up. It's hard for me because sometimes I use the term interchangeably because they work interchangeably. Glowburn in Mutant Crawl Classics is when your mutant characters over the course of their journeys have just gathered up a little bag, a little pouch of mildly radioactive, you know, detritus, pebbles, whatever. And when they want to glowburn, jack a mutation check, they just consume a certain amount of that, get a little nauseous, throw up, and take the stat damage like you would with Spellburn. And that, you know, point for point, whatever the stat damage is, jacks their mutation up. And I should mention that shamans are the one pure strain human class who can also glow burn because they have the wetware programs that they also should be able to jack, both through glow burn and luck.
Okay. Are there any classes that regain luck, like a halfling or a thief would?
Another excellent question. The Plantians recharge their luck and expend their luck exactly like halflings do in DCC. The end-game explanation is that all the sentient plants are capable of exuding either spores or pheromones or pollens that cause other beings to be either favorably or disfavorably disposed towards them. And they can do that for you too, not just for themselves. All the pure strain human classes except shaman have Darwinian luck and generate a point or two a day back.
Darwinian. I love it.
Well, you got to help the pure strain humans out because, you know, they got to be able to carry their weight as a class. All four pure strain humans have to have enough class abilities to balance out, you know, all the mini spellcasters you got in the party, right?
Oh, yeah.
With the mutant characters. So that's five out of seven classes regenerate luck in one form or another. And I wouldn't have been brave enough to make that design decision, except I was privy to some of the monkeying around Mike Curtis was doing for DCC Lankmar, which to better portray that setting with DCC rules, they completely reengineered the luck rules.
Yes. Yes, they did. Yeah, we've been running one of the playtest groups, or Bob has, I should say, and it's been very educational, but also a lot of fun. There's a lot of things that have come up. Hey, can you guys play this out and see how it works? Okay. Yeah, we broke it. Okay, we'll rewrite it. Okay.
It's a crazy balancing act because that thing where there are artifacts laying around everywhere that the players get also functions for the adversaries too. So when you're just second or third level and going through a dungeon and suddenly here are a bunch of cyborgs that all have 6d6 laser rifles, that's a brutal system. So you need some ways to balance that for the PCs.
Yeah.
So they don't just get needlessly slaughtered like in Metamorphosis Alpha.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for those reminders. Well, Job, Jeffrey, do you guys have any other questions about the mechanics? Or
I think Jim hit all the highlights of the stuff that I was really wanted to dive deeper on. Did we skip anything, Jim, that you're really proud of or you want to share with the audience?
Oh, wow. My brain is in so many directions at once. I want to just thank you guys for inviting me back on the old homestead here to talk about this. The main things I want to talk about are not, you know, all the fancy mechanics in Mutant Crawl Classics. I just want to thank everybody that's supporting this game and has made it possible and is ramping this Kickstarter up from the bottom of my heart. I just feel like the luckiest kid on the planet to get to be a part of this.
Aww.
Well, it's kicking butt, so hopefully we get you the Spellburn bump here and really take this one to the next level as far as Goodman Games Kickstarters.
I mean, when I was 18 years old, I'm the exact same age as the characters in that 70s show. So me at 18, when I discovered D&D, I looked exactly like a 5'6" Eric Foreman with Coke bottle giant 70s glasses, right? So that kid is still inside of me, and that kid is just hopping up and down that he got to do this. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
Well, I've got one more question from DM Kojo for you.
Uh-oh.
Oh, well, you saved it for the end, so this is going to be tricky shit.
No, actually, it was one from the middle. I hit you with the tough stuff already. First off, my question. We're still judges, right? We're not transformed into GMs or you know, mutant moms or something like that, right?
Shipmasters.
We're still judges?
No, you're still judges. The players are still murder hobos. Nothing's changed.
Awesome. So the other question he gave us is, what DCC adventures do you think would best translate into MCC?
That is a fantastic question, Kojo. Well,
see?
Done. They come in all grades. Obviously, Against the Atomic Overlords virtually is an MCC adventure. I mean, you could run that. He did a brilliant job with that. You could run that as is, no reskinning required. Just put your MCC characters in there. As part of playtesting the system, intentionally took a bunch of DCC adventures and just gave them a light setting reskinning, including Clip Cario's Gambit. Job.
Oh, cool.
I ran as an MCC adventure. Intrigue at the Court of Chaos, I ran as an MCC adventure, and Hole in the Sky. And I mean,
and just to mention real quick, so Atomic Overlord, that's a Edgar Johnson one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And then Hole in the Sky, that's Brendan LaSalle.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I did Glipcario's Gambit, and then Intrigue at the Court of Chaos, that's Michael Curtis. So yeah. For the listeners that are out there who want to look for those adventures, there you go.
You know, your mileage will vary depending on your GM skills, but, you know, Hole in the Sky, I just did live at the table on the fly, that reskinning. Intrigue of the Court of Chaos, I wanted them to be patron AIs who all lived in the, you know, Van Allen belt, you know, the magnetosphere of the planet. That's where the players went instead of the plane of chaos. So I put a little more, you know, pre-game effort into reskinning that one, and, Glubcario's Gambit. I'm trying to remember. Yeah, time travel's already in that adventure, so that was just my cup of tea. All right, we can. So they time traveled. they got their hands on his necklace, and then they did some time traveling.
Oh, nice.
There is something related to this that's important that I want to say. I did something in the design of MCC that tried to replicate what Joseph did with DCC. If you think of what the DCC setting is, it's not Aerith, the setting that all the pre-role-playing game DCC adventures were set in, the 3E and 4E stuff, right? It's more like a just sort of neutral, generic setting with enough dressing that you know where you are, but you can build on it or run it as, you know, if you want it to be Punjar, you run it as Punjar, right? So I've done the same thing with MCC. I mean, there's a lot of commenting going back and forth on the Kickstarter of, is it like this? Is it like that? You know, I tried to create a certain setting with enough flavor and enough specifics that you could run it as is. But if it was your heart's desire to take the MCC rules and run them like a Road Warrior post-apocalypse or a Thundar the Barbarian post-apocalypse or the Wizards movie, the Ralph Bakshi cartoon Wizards movie, you could do all those things with the core rule book. And that leads back around to what are other adventures that you could run easily with MCC. Read Filippo's Crawling Under Broken Moon fanzine. It's fantastic, and everybody who's interested in this genre who isn't already on top of it should go seek it out, because there's a lot of content that would just you could just run as is. It's a slightly different flavor, more Thundar the Barbarian setting that he's got going there, but that doesn't stop a judge from taking, you know, I like this adventure, I'm going to run it in MCC, or the other way around.
Yeah. I'd love to see something that's actually one of the fan-made current ones, like a 1970s or 80s feel, and run that with the MCC characters. I think that could be a lot of fun.
Like a Fallout 4 version of MCC.
Kind of, sort of, yeah.
Well, I mean, you could do all that. What's more old school than taking something that you buy off the shelf and turn it inside out and making it how you want?
Exactly. But there's so many parts of MCC that I think just flow really well with DCC that, yeah, you could have three genres together even, you know. It's versatile.
Optimized for genre mashing, because that's my thing anyway.
There you go.
Very cool.
All right, I think we have one more segment to get to here, don't we?
I think so.
I talked too much, didn't I? I'm sorry.
I already forgot. What's the one where we rate the guest?
Oh!
Patron Bond.
Is that Patron Bond?
Yes!
All right, I think we should do Patron Bond for old time's sake here.
Okay, so with that then, we'll move it over to where we rate our guest while they are on our show.
Who are you?
Your new lord and master.
What orders from Mordor, my lord?
Oh, don't grovel. One thing I can't stand, it's people groveling.
No hit.
Patron Bond.
So.
I certainly dished Jim. It out plenty when I was one of the hosts. So now I got to take it, right?
And, so, you can be a hit, a critical hit, or
a fumble,
failure.
A hit, or a critical
fumble.
Hit.
I don't think failure is a hit. Fumble. Fumble.
Well, maybe we should do the MCC version. It can be a defect,
it's a mutation for sure.
All right, Jeffrey, give him your grade.
I'm going to give a critical hit. Jim's been working on this for a long time. He's got tons of energy into it. I love the way it blends, how it's set up to blend in with DCC interchange parts. Easy to pick up for someone. I give critical hit. Jen?
I said it's a mutated critical hit, definitely.
Well, I'll give Mutant Crawl Classics a critical hit, and I'll have to give Jim Wampler the fumble for this show because he was so uncommunicative and secretive about his game system. Didn't want to give us all the goodies.
Just sore that you didn't make it to Cincinnati, Job.
Critical hit all the way. Well, I'm depressed because I only ever – I got in one game at North Texas – and it was a funnel, so I didn't get to really see the game system in play. So I got to wait for the book or Gen Con.
Okay, that makes sense.
So
yes,
okay.
We're very glad that you were able to come back at least for, you know, a show. Get the band back together.
Well, you're all entirely too kind, and I'm a listener now from the other side of the fence. So I'm with the guy that wrote in and said more episodes, please.
Yes, we got to get on that.
Noted.
One last question. Are there any plans for a Glowburn podcast?
Not it.
Yeah, if I get to rate the whole thing, I rate it critical mass because I'm just trying to get through this without having a stroke and ending up in the hospital. I hope so. I mean, I just won't be the guy doing it because I can't. I physically can't. And God help me, I should know this man's name, and I forgot. Somebody went off and created a Mutant Crawl Classics Google Plus page and offered it to me. Said, "I'll give you the admin to this." And I'm just like, "I can't do it. Please, it's a great idea. I'm all for it. I'll support it. Go."
Awesome. Well, I just wanted to put that little thought idea out there in the internet. Hopefully,
listening to this show who's always wanted to do a podcast,
and that also tells us that there's a Mutant Crawl Classics group on G+. Go hop in on that one as well as the DCC RPG group.
Yeah, we'll put that in the show notes. I wasn't aware of that, so I want to join myself.
I think people forget none of us, you know, came out of the birth canal doing podcasts. We all one day just said, hey, I'd like to try that, and figured it out. You can too, dear listener.
Yep.
Okay. Right. Well, thanks for joining us, Jim. It's great. It was great having you back on the show. Great getting to hear you, you know, be a little more forthcoming with Mutant Carl Classics. All the other times I always had to be a little hint around and stuff. So it's great to hear about it from you. Glad you could make the time to get to us. I'm sure you have been busy. So thanks for coming on tonight.
My pleasure.
Yeah, thanks so much, Jim.
See everybody next con. We're all at.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yep. Sounds good. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. See ya.
Have a good night, guys.
See you later, people.
Bye.
Glowburn.